Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
With respect to the drone inside of Iran, I'm not going to comment on intelligence matters that are classified. As has already been indicated, we have asked for it back. We'll see how the Iranians respond.
Oh, the weather outside is frightful. What the fire is so And since we've no place
to go. So we have Santa Claus in the White House now. He's dreaming that the Iranians will return a top-secret drone. Listen, I have a question for you in the Savage Nation. You're driving around on a dark night. I'm trying to put my mind into the mind of the, I don't know, millions, hundreds of thousands any minute are listening to the Savage Nation. And I'm asking you, I'm trying to ask myself, what are you thinking about right now that really compels you to call a radio show or listen to a radio show? Because I'm going to tell you what's bothering me. You can call me if you want and tell me what really is plaguing you. I mean, the Romans said, it was actually Cato the Elder who wrote, the ancient Roman historian, that the average Roman didn't really care about a drone going down in Iran, as it were. They cared about the pebble in their shoe, meaning the average Roman, just like you, was interested in what affected him personally, the price of meat, the price of wheat, the price of eggs, the price of leather. And so I think things haven't really changed in some ways. But under Obama, it's very worrisome. And we must focus on Obama's national insecurity and the domestic terrorism that is occurring in this country by Occupy Communists. And I want to talk about that for a minute. Yes, two drones have gone down. Yes, I've asked twice, is there a mole inside the U.S. Air Force? Nobody in Congress seems to be getting the message that these drones going down may not be going down on their own. It's too coincidental. It seems to me that the Iranians have somebody inside the Air Force, and the U.S. government will be the last to know it, given the nature of the diversity mentality inside the military. And then we have the issue of domestic terrorism. What do I mean by domestic terrorism? Here on the West Coast, this ragtag bunch of vermin, these non-working left-wing fanatics called occupiers, shut down ports and stopped the free flow of goods, stopped the transportation, stopped trucks, stopped the flow of material across the West Coast. What the heck is the Department of Homeland Security set up to do but to stop this from happening? I'd like to know what their mandate is. What do they have, a trillion-dollar-a-year budget? And what are they doing, spying on you? Why is the Department of Homeland Security not stopping the occupiers when they have clearly violated federal and state laws by blocking interstate and intrastate commerce and blocking international commerce? And I'd like to know why our useless governor, Jerry Brown, has nothing to say about these bums who are blocking interstate, intrastate, and international commerce. I'd like to know why I, a talk show host, have to ask these questions. I'd like to know why I'm the only one in America who seems to be conscious of the fact that we have both domestic terrorism by occupiers and also national insecurity. Now, I know that Obama's sycophants will say, but wait a minute, isn't he the man who has shot down Osama bin Laden? Didn't he kill 22 out of the 30 top al-Qaeda leaders who've been taken off the field? And that proves that he's a great leader in a time of national terrorism. Well, let's give him credit for that. I'm glad he took down Osama bin Laden. It certainly is a very good thing that he did that. But my friends, I ask you a question. What about Mr. Obama's great outreach to the world's Muslims? His bending over backwards to kiss their rings, to kiss their headdresses. Has this resulted in increased goodwill towards the United States? Has it resulted in important Muslim outreach to America? Of course not. And what about this fraudulent Arab Spring, which I warned you about from the beginning, was really an Arab winter. Yet our out-of-touch, clueless White House continues to refer to the Arab Spring as a moment of progress created by none other than Lady, the Dragon Lady, Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton, George Soros, Zbigniew Brzezinski, and Barack Obama have committed perhaps the greatest error in the history of American policy. The Arab Spring is not a spring. Why do I say it? Because Islamist parties are rising across the Arab Crescent. And my friends, either Obama knows this or he doesn't know this. Does he understand that this is an emerging threat? How about nuclear proliferation? Iran continues its march towards gaining a nuclear weapon, unabated. North Korea developing a ballistic missile that could deliver a nuclear warhead to the United States homeland. Pakistan, what are they doing? Well, what they're doing is nothing. The fact of the matter is our country is now facing a greater risk of a rogue nuclear attack than it did when Obama took office. How about Miss Clinton's famous reset with Russia? Really? Are you sure about that? Look, killing Osama bin Laden was a great achievement, but there are greater threats in the world than this one terrorist. The fact of the matter is this country is in tremendous danger right now. And while this administration has presided over the end of U.S. manned spaceflight, China is planning an expedition to the moon. And while this anti-war, anti-military president has presided over the end of many great weapon systems, including today we learn he's just killed the F-22 Raptor jet, killed it, saying the plane is no longer needed in a post-Cold War setting. This is at the same time that the Iran Navy is threatening to block off the Strait of Hormuz to illustrate their power to disrupt the world's oil supply. So we have a lot to worry about. We have a lot to worry about. And I ask you, shouldn't the Department of Homeland Security be stopping the occupiers from blocking West Coast ports? I'd like to know why Janet Napolitano is able to get away with this. They have a $1 trillion budget. What the hell are they doing with it? So I ask you, what is worrying you right now? Now, all of these are very important questions. I recognize that. But you're probably listening to me, Michael Savage, driving around on a dark road somewhere on the East Coast where I have a very large audience. And I have to say, I understand where you're coming from. Maybe these questions don't plague you because you can't do much about Iran or Russia or China or Pakistan or even Obama. They're all so far away from you that all you can do is sit there and pray to God that tomorrow will come. And I know this is the most important election in American history. And I know there's been an endless campaign by Republicans. And yes, I know that the Middle East is on fire because of Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, and George Soros. And yes, I know the world is sort of in a low-grade hell. But what really bothers me today is a pair of broken eyeglass frames. You see, they're 3 years old. They were Tommy Bahama frames, and the hinge broke off last week. Well, I took them back to the prescription eyeglass store that sold them to me, and they said, sorry, Tommy Bahama frames no longer available. So then I asked one of the clerks if they could get me the part that was broken. And she looked it up on a computer, called the company, and smiled at me and said, no, I'm happy to report that part is unavailable. As I see in so many stores, these dumb clerks are happy to send you away. And I said, you know, you've shown more happiness telling me about something you can't do for me than anything else you seem to have done today. No wonder your company is bankrupt. So then I went to call a jewelry store that I was told can fix eyeglass frames. And they cheerfully told me on the phone, yes, we can. But the minimum charge for laser soldering is $85. I said, are you crazy? $85 is almost as much as the eyeglass frames cost. Well, this is a microcosm of what's wrong with America today. Where are the tradesmen who used to fix eyeglass frames while you waited for $10, $15? It should take all of 3 to 5 minutes. So that would be about $10, $15 worth of work, I suppose, including overhead, workers' comp, and machinery. But $85 minimum? So what am I supposed to do, throw out prescription lenses because I can't find a frame that they will fit into? Yes, say the companies. Throw them away in your throwaway society. Throw them away the way you throw out your grandfather when he's no longer useful. So what does this have to do with world affairs and the election? Everything and nothing. Do you think there is one candidate who can change this in America? I don't. Do you think any of the candidates or the existing president is going to create tradesmen in America who can fix eyeglass frames? I don't. So where does that leave us? Exactly where we are today, with a giant pebble in our shoe. I'll be right back.
Savage.
We have bent over backwards to say to the Islamic Republic of Iran that we are willing to have a constructive conversation.
Strong presidents talk to their adversaries. That's what Kennedy did with Khrushchev.
We haven't shown a willingness to engage in the sort of direct negotiations with Iran.
Iran, Cuba, Venezuela, these countries are tiny. They don't pose a serious threat to us.
Rudolph the red-nosed reindeer had a very shiny...
It's not even funny. This man is a combination, kind of a martinet. I'm trying to look for the right word. He's sort of a petty tyrant who's weak on the world stage. He frightens most Americans who love America. He puts fear in our heart for fear that he's targeting us. With all of his wrath and all of the powers that he has at his disposal, the FBI, DHS, you name it. We all fear this man, as we should not, while our enemies basically give him the middle finger. Can you imagine a president saying, we're asking Iran to return the drone? The most top secret weapon we have in our arsenal is delivered to the Iranians. And instead of the president getting up and saying, this is an outrage, we're going to investigate this, and we're not going to stop until we find how this happened, we're going to close down this shop. We're not going to let anyone out of that drone operational unit, whatever it may be called, until we find out what the heck is going on. Because I personally think that there's a mole inside the Pentagon. That's the only thing I would conclude at this point. And I'm just using common sense, and often common sense is the right approach. But it seems to be so lacking amongst our political class, because they don't think. Don't you understand how political classes work, especially in a dictatorship? We have a bureaucratic dictatorship in America. Make no mistake about it. A bureaucratic dictatorship is so dangerous, I don't think most people understand what this really means. It means if there's a DHS agent or an FBI agent who thinks the way I do, he can't do his job, because his higher-up tells him not to think, not to act, to do exactly what he's told. And it all comes from one central power, who is Janet Napolitano in DHS, who then answers to her boss in the Justice Department, who is the esteemed Eric Holder, who was involved with the fast and furious gun running to Mexico, whether it was by accident or purpose, doesn't really matter. So they don't have the capacity for individual thought. And, you know, you go back, now harken back in history with me. Remember World War II? Remember the Nazi regime? Remember how many good-thinking Americans laughed when they heard Germans say, I was only following orders? That should chill you, because our government now has hundreds of thousands of operatives who may not want to do what they're doing, but they will do it for fear of being fired, reprimanded, losing their jobs and pensions, because they were only following orders. No one within this governmental chain dares step outside the governmental chain. They're only following orders. So it all goes back to who's the chief executive, doesn't it? And that is the rub. Ah, there's the rub. That's the question. Who is the chief executive? We have a chief executive who is a mixture of so many loose ends, it's hard to describe him. Some have said he's very much like this one. Some have said he's very much like that one. I would say Obama's very much like himself, a dyed-in-the-wool, radical left-winger from the 1960s, a throwback, as it were, to the worst and darkest period in modern American history. He doesn't seem to be able to break out of it, does he? Here is a man who loses the most top-secret weapon that we have in our arsenal and says he's asking Iran to return it. Here is a man who has unleashed the Arab Spring onto the world stage when I saw what it was going to be from the beginning and called it what it is, which is the Arab winter, where Islamists are taking over across the Arab spectrum of the North Arabian countries. And he still calls it an awakening in the Arab world. Are these people crazy? Do they not live in the real world? Now we lose a drone. Now we lose the Middle East. What's next? Well, let's go down the list. We have a group of anarchists, radicals, communists called occupiers talking about the disparity in income in America exactly the same way Trotsky, Lenin, and the others talked about it in the Soviet Union while it was still Russia. The same exact rhetoric that was spewed out by the hateful Bolsheviks in Russia is being spewed out by this ragtag bunch of dangerous domestic criminals. And instead of using the DHS to arrest them, the DHS is actually working against the local police upon whose shoulders this falls. They have to deal with this hippie scum. It's the police who have to deal with the hippie rats with their headscarves and their bandanas looking just like Al-Qaeda. Oh, they're so brave, aren't they? Because they know that all they're going to get is a pair of plastic handcuffs and then be sent home where they can celebrate that night with a joint and a little sex. God only knows what a sickening country this has become, because this would never happen in the country in which I grew up. It would never happen. Never would you see people in the newspaper business secretly cheering on this band of vermin. Never would you see newspapers writing glowingly about these dirty, filthy rats. But let's get down to the point of view of reality here. What do you fear the most right now? What do you fear the most right now, December 2011? You're listening to a radio show. Maybe you listen to me regularly. You know it's a very big radio show. Some of you could have just tuned in because you heard Christmas music of Let It Snow and you didn't even know what you were listening to, which is why I'm playing Christmas music. And then you heard this guy talk about eyeglass frames, and you don't know what he's talking about. Many of you don't even know what I'm even talking about. And that's why we're in such trouble. There's a level of stupidity and ignorance in America that has never existed before, and it's a direct result of too many people have gone to college. You heard what I said? When this country was high school educated, the people were smarter. The boys who went to World War II were smarter than this generation of morons who have bachelor's degree in social engineering. Seven. So I'm bringing up all of these big topics, national security, national insecurity, international insecurity. I'm asking you, should the Department of Homeland Security crack down on the occupiers in that they are domestic terrorists who are doing exactly what Osama bin Laden wanted to do, which was interrupt our economy? Did you hear what I just said? Osama bin Laden had a mandate. It was to interrupt the U.S. economy and cause a damage. It's the same exact rhetoric as you're hearing from the Occupy movement, and yet our federal government is not strangely silent, but silent because they are complicit with the Occupy movement. In fact, Obama owns the Occupy movement. Now, if there was a Republican candidate out there who really understood the zeitgeist of the American people and what they care about, they'd be running ads talking about Obama owning the Occupy movement and then flash to the hippies in the gutters. That's what I would be running as ads, not attacking each other. But we don't have that, do we? We have a man in the White House who God only knows what he is, a combination of Neville Chamberlain, Jimmy Carter, Mr. Rogers, and Vladimir Lenin. We don't know who he is. It's as though there's a mystery man in the White House. Some days he's an atheist. Some days we fear he's a Muslim. Then he's attacked by Perry and he goes to church on Sunday with his family. And they look beautiful going to church. We don't know who he is. And yet you want to talk about eyeglass frames. Most of the callers I'm getting right now are eyeglass frames. Incidentally, Trump bowed out as debate moderator. You heard about that. That's a very interesting story unto itself. It's actually a huge story in its own way. Not that it's Trump, but that nobody would show up for the debate except one or two guys. That was about it. And I guess he was smart enough to realize it would have been an embarrassment, and he pulled out at that time. But there are other problems. I mean, the last F-22 rolled off the assembly line. Obama says we don't need it. Obama ends the shuttle program while China's building a mission to the moon. Is U.S. prepared for an electromagnetic pulse attack? I doubt it, because our president would say, who would do that to us? We live in a new world, a brave new world. why Bill Gates is in China right now helping them build advanced nuclear power plants. China is our friend. This is at the same time that China's president is telling its Navy to get ready for war. I feel like I'm living in a crazy universe. Am I the only one who sees the world this way? Am I the only one who sees that unless these port occupiers are arrested by the federal government, this is going to become a cancer that will not be stopped? And is that, am I the only one who's asking, why is Obama and the federal government, why is Jerry Brown, the impotent governor of California, permitting these vermin to close down our ports when the state is bankrupt? What is a government supposed to do? Govern the free flow of goods and services, the upholding of a state constitution in the form of a, in the case of a state, the upholding of the national constitution, the federal constitution, in the case of the federal government. That's what they're supposed to do. They're supposed to get out of our way and let us be free spirits and free beings. Instead, they're doing nothing. Instead, they're letting a group of 0.0001% of rabble, jealous, hateful, drug-crazed rabble, interrupt interstate, intrastate, international commerce. They have failed us completely. They should be impeached for this. Why am I the only one who sees what this is? At the same time this is going on, two drones go down. One into the hands of the Iranians without so much as a microchip damaged on it. I fear that there is a mole inside the CIA who was allegedly controlling this drone. They say it was an Air Force controller or a CIA drone. It doesn't matter. They've been penetrated under this moronic regime that believes more in diversity than in national security. Their watchword is not national security. You actually think Obama lays awake at night worrying about national security? If he lays awake at night worrying about anything, it's about national diversity and getting reelected. All right, I've said enough. I've gotten into more hot water than I intended to so far. Las Vegas, Andrew, you'll be the first up this hour. Go ahead, please.
Yes. Hey, Mike, I just want to mention that that drone, being a CIA drone, raises a lot of possibilities because it was controlled, obviously, by Obama's inner circle. The CIA director, I'm sure the guidance for the operation of that drone came directly from the National Security Council. So I think it's very possible that, whatever happened could have been planned from the very top.
Well, let's talk about this for a minute or two, since the government owes us an explanation. This is the loss of the most advanced weapon that we have in our arsenal, built with taxpayer funds, and the government lost two of them. One crashed in the Seychelles yesterday, and the other one was delivered to the Iranians intact. Why should we not ask if there's not a mole inside the drone operation program, especially when we have an administration that seems to be soft on Islamic terrorism?
Well, I don't even know if it has to be a mole. I don't trust the intentions of the president. And, who knows what his, intentions are when he's directing.
Well, let's turn the clock back. The drones were being used very successfully to kill al-Qaeda operatives all over Pakistan. Is that correct? And Pakistan was getting, al-Qaeda was being decimated to the credit of Obama. They were doing a fabulous job. Then Pakistan complained about it, remember? They started complaining. Then there was the incident of about 10 days ago when civilians were killed by a drone Pakistani soldiers were killed by a drone. All of a sudden, within days, a drone is delivered to Iran. All of a sudden, a few days later, another drone goes down in the Seychelles. So is this the administration's way of placating the Islamists? What in the world is this all about?
Mike, I think it could be Obama's his plan from the top, or it just could be incompetence in general of the CIA's operations against our so-called enemies.
Yes, because the CIA is not what people think it is anymore. The CIA has been desperately dredging the university corridors for the lowest common denominator to fill their halls in the CIA. It's not what it once was. It's not the right stuff anymore. It's not people in a secret society who care about America. It's not like the old guard. You know what it is today. It looks like a college campus in there, and it's mainly people who can't get a job anywhere else. And especially if you speak Farsi, you go to the head of the class. So how do we know who they hired? It could just be a moronic college kid who played with a joystick in his parents' bedroom and doesn't know what he's doing.
Exactly. It's the bureaucrats running an organization. I don't compare it with the military, who I have a lot of faith in and who I know there are a lot of patriotic individuals that would never let this type of thing happen, you know, from the mid ranks and on up.
Absolutely. But as I said, it's all we were just following orders. And nobody will break ranks and come out in the public and say, I think it's incompetence, or I think that there's a mole, or I think Obama's obsession at the CIA with diversity is the result, is it has caused this. Nobody will dare say that because they'll lose their job. So therefore, it's just like the Nazi government where they were said they were just following orders. There's no difference. If this administration went rogue and went crazy and said, start rounding up anybody who waves an American flag, by God, they'd round you up if you waved an American flag. And then years from now, if there are ever trials, they would say, oh, well, we were only following orders. We're sorry for the people we killed. This is how it happens. When you have a top-down bureaucracy with a petty tyrant in the highest office, this is what happens.
Well, I feel like Obama puts these incompetent bumblers in charge of these organizations just so he can control them and basically execute his plan.
Why in the world did they take Leon Panetta, a guy who ran a college that almost nobody went to in Monterey, and send them out to run the Defense Department, then the CIA, then the Defense Department? Why was Leon Panetta picked when he had no security no national security background whatsoever? How did he get through Congress?
Who knows? Who knows what the backroom deals are?
Well, I'll give you the answer. I'll give you my guess, because I don't have an answer. I'm a man alone in a room. Where does he come from, the San Francisco Bay Area? Who is the most powerful political figure in the San Francisco Bay Area? Nancy Pelosi, Barbara Boxer, Dianne Feinstein, that's who they are. Why would these women want Leon Panetta running first the CIA and then the Defense Department? Tell me why. There's only one answer. And there's only one answer to it all. And you know what the answer is. It begins with a C and it ends with an S.
Well, Mike, the question is...
Contracts! Contracts, nothing else. Follow the money. That's about it. That's the best guess I could make, because something's wrong with this picture. Now let's go on to something far more important. Let's go to New York City on WOR. Jeff, on this dark night, what are you calling about? Go ahead, please.
Hello?
Yes, Jeff.
Yeah, Michael, I'm calling about your eyeglasses.
Okay, so how much does a hinge cost?
Well, for the frame you're talking about, probably we would charge about $45, but the problem is that, you know...
Wait, so you're telling me a Tommy Bahama frame costs $45 for a brand new frame?
No, the arm piece, if you wanted the arm piece.
Oh.
Okay, the whole
frame. How much did I pay? I paid a couple of $100 for those frames about 3 years ago, weren't they? Isn't that what they cost?
$180 frame, so 45, you break it down into 40.
All right, so the hinge broke. How much would a hinge cost?
Yeah, but it's like the arm piece would be about $45. Break it down.
Now, when you say the arm piece, you mean the whole side thing with the hinge built into it?
Yeah, the air piece, correct. But, I mean, a lot of these places don't sell pieces because it's not the way they used to make it.
There's no money in. So what do they mean by laser welding costs $85? What's that?
Yeah, well, that's a ripoff on that one. I don't know, $85. We got people doing it here for $25, but... 85, it seems a little excessive.
Well, I remember when I was young in New York in the subway, there were people who had little stands. They'd fix anything. You'd go in and they'd give you an eyeglass frame. They'd fix it in 2 seconds while you're waiting for the A-train.
But the problem is...
The days are old. Play the A-train by my good friend Duke. Duke. We have the A-frame. Remember I used to play that all the time on the show? The Duke. Who did the A-frame, Beowulf? I forgot his name already. My mind is... It's been so long. No one remembers anything. Duke Ellington, that's right, a good friend of mine. I personally knew him very well. Right, I knew him. Can't find it? Isn't there a button you guys hit when I say a song, you just hit A for... Nothing. It's so awful. It's unbelievable. I would think that by now you'd know if I say A-Train, you hit A-Train and it comes up. They actually have to search an archive. I don't... Oh, thank God. I almost fainted from asking for it. Let's lighten it up. Let's bring her down slowly. Let's slow her down. Coming down off the pass. Coming down off Highway 80 in the snow. Slow that truck down. Well, you hear music like this, it brings you back to a different world. I wasn't even born, but I don't know. There's something gone wrong. Something went off the track. When did it happen? I'll give you the answer because I know everything. It went off the track. Three men destroyed America. Three men and one woman destroyed America. I figured this out. In fact, I think I should make it the keystone of my next book, Trickle Down Tyranny, which it's too late because it went to the publisher already. But maybe we should add it to the beginning. America went off the track when three devils and one woman devil appeared on the planet in our country. The woman was Bella Abzug with the Woman's Movement. The men were William Kunstler, Timothy Leary, and Allen Ginsberg. Now, why do I say that? Why do I blame them for the downfall of the United States of America? I'll tell you when I come back on the Savage Nation. Savage. Okay, so what bothers me the most? What bothers me the most is that Al-Qaeda has a desire to cripple America's economy. Osama bin Laden had a desire to cripple America's economy. And now we have domestic terrorists wearing headscarves who are blocking ports in the state of California, Oregon, Washington, along the West Coast, of course. And the federal government looks on as though it's simply freedom of expression or freedom of assembly when it's not. Freedom of assembly does not mean interfering with interstate or interstate commerce. It does not mean blocking a terminal from offloading preciously needed goods and sending preciously needed sales across the waters. It means that they're not doing their job. It means the Obama administration is either complicit with the Occupy movement, which I'm pretty sure it is, or they're totally clueless as to what their responsibility is as a government. And the same goes for the far left government in the state of California under the faker Jerry Brown. He had me fooled. Everyone knows that I liked him because I met him a number of years ago through a friend and I donated money to his campaign. I met him at a Jerry Brown, that is, because I was told he had moved away from his old days as Governor Moonbeam. He was no longer a left winger. I was told he was a centrist. I was told that he was this. I was told he was that. And I met him at a military academy in the East Bay where there was a speech given and scholarships for kids. I thought it was great. Little did I know that one day he'd be governor again, and suddenly it's 1960 and the Finns are back. Suddenly it's 1960 and the Finns are back. Every failed policy of the 1960s is being tried again in the state of California. Every failed policy of the radical 60s is being tried again by the college morons surrounding Obama. And if they don't work, they try another one. The country is falling apart. The wheels are falling off the economy. We're losing drones. He's ending the military supremacy across the planet. Iran's military is threatening to block the Strait of Hormuz to illustrate their power to disrupt the world's oil supply. Obama is crippling the pipeline from Canada, the Keystone Pipeline, that would bring preciously needed oil, precious and needed oil, from Canada to the United States without having to ship it from the Arabian Peninsula, and Obama's blocking it? To me, this is a violation of national security, what Obama's doing. Why would he block the flow of oil into America? Why? Ask yourself, can't you put one and one and one and one together and come up with the right figure? I mean, either he's the most incompetent president, or he is working for the other team. There's no other explanation for this. But what's the point? It's December 13th, 2011, and you don't care. Nothing seems to bother the American people, and I think it's the drugs. I think that the medical pharmaceutical establishment has finally achieved the drugging of our society to an extent that even Huxley's Brave New World couldn't predict. I do believe that. And I'm talking to you, the man out there who thinks that he's conscious, even though you're probably swimming in six different prescriptions. That's right, six different prescriptions, and they're all affecting your mind. Oh, one may be for arthritis, another may be for the prostate, the other may be for your ankle, the fourth may be for your alopecia, the sixth may be for your erection, the seventh may be for your hearing, but the fact of the matter is you add them all up and you wind up as an absolutely useless voter. You don't even know what's going on in your own country. Then you've got the media. Then you've got Moloch, who runs Fox News. You got Moloch. You got the others who have basically, I don't know, what are you going to say? You open up a website, a newspaper, all you see are sluts from Hollywood going in and out of rehab as the role models for our daughters. This is a country? That's a role model? One slut after another slipping on her own... I don't even want to finish the sentence. Slipping in a nightclub, and now she's in rehab, now she's out. Then she's on Oprah, then she's on Good Morning America telling us about rehab. I could puke when I turn the TV on. I've never seen anything like it. It gets worse by the day. It gets worse by the day under this administration. Because leadership either comes... Look, let's put it the other way. You heard this years ago. A fish rots from the head down. This country is rotting from the head down. Make no mistake about it. This man has nothing but contempt for the entire body politic. He sneers at us. He thinks he's above all of us. And he's surrounded by ivory tower lunatics who have never created a product or a service that anybody ever needed. Most of them either worked in the government or they've worked in universities. They don't even understand what country they're living in. In fact, they don't even like the country they're living in. In fact, they'd like to see our borders, language, and culture disappear completely. They think that we're part of the bigger world. They sophisticates, you know, from the universities. Oh, yes, I may live on the Upper West Side of Manhattan, but I'm not really an American. I'm a citizen of the world, they would say. You are? Then why don't you go live in Uganda? If you're a citizen of the world, why don't you pack up your suitcase and your laptop and go live in Africa somewhere and show us what a citizen of the world you really are instead of running back and forth from the Upper West Side to NYU and Vermont. Back and forth, Vermont, NYU, and the Upper West Side. NYU, Upper West Side, Vermont, and with an occasional trip to some third world country where you can exploit children in the name of research. Last Raptor rolls off assembly line. F-22 Raptor. End of the story. He kills NASA. He kills the Raptor. And we're sitting here like idiots. Everything's fine. Drones are going down. Pipelines are being blocked. Iran is snubbing us. And he says he's asking Iran to give back the drone. Please give it back to me. Can we please have it back, says America? Can you imagine from walk softly and carry a big stick to nothing?
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
What's up with these sorry politicians? Lots of bark. When it's showtime, whimpering like little shih tzus. You want big cuts? Ron Paul's been screaming it for years. Budget crisis? No problem. Cut $1 trillion year one. That's trillion with a T. Department of Education? Gone. Interior, Energy, HUD, Commerce? Gone. Later, bureaucrats. That's how Ron Paul rolls. Want to drain the swamp? Ron Paul. Do it.
I'm Ron Paul, and I approve this message.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation. This show is one of the biggest shows in the United States of America. It's the third largest radio show in the country. In terms of the web, it's number two in the country. And make no mistake about it, there are a lot of jealous people out there. And the worst of them is a man who's very, very mentally ill. Very since half of his show's attacking me because he knows he has no faith in himself. He knows that he doesn't belong on radio. He knows that it was not for Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity. Nobody would know him other than as a hack lawyer. And so, ladies and gentlemen, pay no attention to what Groucho Marx's illegitimate grandson is saying. Michael Savage is the third largest radio show in the country. And on the web, he has surged to number two while this individual has collapsed completely invisible. Now, having set the stage for that, we'll go to the question of the day, which is, I'm not going to talk about the polls. I will not talk about the polls because they're nonsense. They're mainly Democrat polls or Republican polls or polls run by pollsters just for the sake of running a poll. And they mean nothing. And frankly, I'm sick of them all. And the reason I'm sick of them all is because I would like to be able to vote myself instead of depending upon fake pollsters and polls to tell me who I think should be president. In fact, I don't know how this country has devolved to this state where an election goes on for so long. It's sickening, frankly. So there are a lot of problems with democracy. There are bigger problems with our form of government than ever before. And we, the people, are stuck here watching it all go around in a kind of nightmarish fashion. At the same time, the incompetence of this administration is growing by leaps and bounds. Drones are going down. Air Force systems are being canceled. One thing after another. But the biggest problem to me is what's going on here in the streets on the West Coast. Remember now, Osama bin Laden attacked the World Trade Center in an attempt to interrupt the economy of the United States of America. Remember that? He said he wanted to interrupt the economy and bankrupt the United States of America. Well, in some ways, he's achieved what he wanted to do. What with the trillions of dollars being spent on Homeland Security and various and sundry other spy agencies who are spending more time spying on Americans than spying on Al-Qaeda, he may as well have bankrupted the country. But then you look at what's going on with these anarchists and communists and other riffraff hippie vermin, getting together a few hundred of them and blocking ports on the West Coast. Ships can't come and go and unload goods. Truckers can't get in and out of the ports to unload. And the government does nothing. Why is DHS not intervening and stopping these terrorists? After all, they boast about it. We read about them in the newspapers. One radical leftist after another says, oh, wow, we succeeded. We shut down the port of Oakland. We shut down the port of Seattle. They are domestic terrorists. If we had a legitimate federal government, they would be rounded up and arrested for committing acts of domestic terrorism in the same way that an Al-Qaeda operative would. They don't have to come from abroad to commit domestic terrorism. And I'm again asking, Matt, let me ask you, am I wrong in asking this question? Should Department of Homeland Security, should the FBI be involved in arresting occupiers when they interfere, not when they're expressing an opinion, when they interfere with the free flow of goods and services, to me, they're breaking the law. Am I wrong in this? Why am I asking this question? Okay, let's go on to the callers. New York, WOR. New York, Al, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yes, it's an honor to speak with you, Mr. Michael Savage. You're like a
Thank
brother
you.
I never had.
Thank you.
I want to comment on this drone in Iran. I believe,
yes,
possibly, another facet of the stone is that they gave it to Iran simply to keep them from building nuclear weapons because they already have nuclear radiation in their nation to build things maybe for medicine and purifying water and that sort of thing. I believe this could be a facet to keep them from building nuclear weapons. And you also mentioned the thing about drones.
Wait, I'm not following you. What, giving them a drone is a way to stop them from building a nuclear weapon? How?
Well, with all the technology that, if this is the latest technology, concerning
yes,
this drone, they don't have it. It's
right,
like a token of letting them have it, thinking they did something good for their country. And,
so you mean,
well,
this is along the lines of the communist sympathizers in the American nuclear community after World War II who shared it with the Soviet Union, feeling that if we all shared these secrets, there would be less likely of a nuclear holocaust, along the lines of the Manhattan Project scientists, some of whom were communists, who actually worked with the Soviet Union. It turned out later on we found out some of them were working with the communists in order to prevent the nuclear war. That's the thinking amongst these eggheads?
That's a possibility, Your Eminence. I'm telling you, anything is possible in this world today. I mean, if
yes,
you remember history.
Well, all right, it is possible, but it'd be a violation of espionage acts, and the person who did this should be arrested, tried for espionage. I mean, this is what I want. I want to know why our Congress is not saying we're going to get to the bottom of these drones going down. We're going to conduct an investigation inside the CIA and see who did this. We're not going to rest until we find out if this is not an act of sabotage or espionage. And if they're found out to have been so, they're going to be tried, and they're going to be punished to the full extent of the law. Why is that an irrelevant question?
Sir?
Thanks for the call. I mean, I'm asking a rhetorical question. Oregon, on the other side of America. Joan, welcome to the powerhouse show. The United States of America has never seen anything like it before, the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Okay, my feeling on the subject is with the drones going down, it's not a plant in the Air Force. It's not someone in the Defense Department. We have ruined our manufacturing to the point of subletting so much from our defense contractors to China and other not necessarily well-supervised places that they are now implanting in components that come back to our Raptors and to our highly sophisticated satellites, bugs. And all you have to do
so
is...
So you think that these chips may have been made in China?
Or someone got paid off in South Korea who needed money. You don't know. There's too much going on.
Yes, I understand. With global commerce, virtually every mechanical apparatus is composed of parts made in various parts of the world. I recently flew on a plane, and I looked up on the internet where it was made. Although it's a Canadian company that makes the Bombardier Challenger 300, I was shocked to find out the nose cone was made in Ireland, the tail cone was made in Malaysia, and the body was made in Canada. I couldn't believe it. And then they all came together, made into this Challenger 300 airplane. And I said, well, wait a minute. So what does this mean about the military? You're saying the same thing is occurring in the military in terms of outsourcing.
We've had generals that have said, if we don't stop this, we're going to be corrupting ourselves.
And oh,
I think
boy.
That's what's happening.
Oh, boy. Well, it reminds me of a play called All My Sons that was written by Arthur Miller in the 1950s. Do you ever remember seeing that, hearing that movie, or seeing that movie or hearing that play?
Exactly.
Do you know what it was about? All My Sons. It's an amazing movie, and I'm going to send you a copy of Abuse of Power, my best-selling novel. I'm going to tell the people what this is, and then Beowulf, you're going to get some of the sound bites, because it was about a corrupt manufacturer in World War II, played by Edward G. Robinson. One of his sons was played by Burt Lancaster, I recall, famous actors of their time. And the manufacturer made pistons for aircraft engines. And he cut corners in his factory during World War II in order to make a higher profit and speed the engines along. Well, it turns out that one of his other sons enlisted in the Air Force because he was a patriot, went into action, his plane blew up because the piston that his father manufactured was defective and the engine blew up, okay? And it was about this moral tension between profit and patriotism. Listen to this clip right now between Burt Lancaster and his dad, who was the corrupt manufacturer. Listen.
What kind of a man are you anyway? Kids hanging in the air by those cylinders, and you knew it. Oh, I was so proud of you. You were helping us to win, and you were worried about your business. Don't you have a country? Don't you think about people? Don't you live in the world? Haven't you got a heart? Oh, what must I do to you? What must I do to you?
Now, that was acting when they were still actors before they became drug addicts with an attitude. But the fact of the matter is, it's interesting that Arthur Miller was a far-left guy in his time, but if you look at his play today, he'd be considered a conservative. Arthur Miller today would be considered a conservative. He'd be a member of a Tea Party by his politics. You hear this? Don't you have a country? Aren't you a patriot? Can you imagine anyone on MSNBC saying that? Those mocking fools, I'll be right back.
Savage.
You've even written about the use of drugs in this light.
This is the pharmacological revolution which has taken place, that we have now powerful mind-changing drugs. Physiologically speaking, are almost costless. I mean, they are not like opium or like cocaine, which do change the state of mind, but leave terrible results physiologically and morally.
That was Aldous Huxley being interviewed, I guess, on a television show, Beowulf. I don't know when that was. A TV show. He foresaw what was going to happen to the Western world, where the whole Western civilization has been drugged into submission. And you can't lay the blame on any one individual. It's just a product of a slow-moving snowball that has evolved to this level, which is why we have the political class that we have being able to get away with this level of incompetence and treason. There's no other way I can put it. There's no other way to explain it. Even the business community, where there's tremendous jaundice toward the mega, mega, mega business community, and we know why. When you see companies like General Electric, which owns NBC and MSNBC, and uses these party hacks simply to promote their tax dodging scheme by calling for taxes on the rich when their own parent corporation pays no income taxes, so far as I know. Or when you see Microsoft employing a thousand former IRS agents as their lawyers, and they pay almost no income tax, according to what I've checked. And then you see Bill Gates playing the nice guy over in China, developing super nuclear reactors for China. You ask yourself, how did a country reach this point where there is no loyalty and no patriotism? In fact, the opposite is what is protected by the federal government. The opposite of loyalty, the opposite of patriotism is protected by the federal government. Because if you're too loyal or too patriotic in this country, you're suspect. And the DHS, instead of protecting us from domestic terrorists who are interfering with interstate and intrastate commerce, which I keep repeating, the DHS is more afraid of you, the patriot member of the Tea Party, than they are of those blocking interstate and intrastate commerce. You understand what I'm saying to you? We have an obligation. There's an old saying that's actually a liberal saying from the 70s. Something along the lines, when the leaders won't lead the people must lead the leaders. Remember that bumper sticker from the 70s? Boy, does that apply. When the leaders won't lead the people must lead the leaders. I'm begging the leadership of this country to wake up to the incompetence that is so apparent to so many of us. Here we have, on the West Coast, ports are being blocked, commerce is being blocked, ships are being blocked, trucks are being blocked, all illegal, all violations of federal and state laws. Yet not one state agency intervened. Jerry Brown is too busy placating the unions. Not one federal agency intervened with the occupiers who blocked this traffic at these ports. We the people are demanding that our government do its job, state and federal. Now, maybe if I continue to talk about it, you will start talking about it, and maybe the Congress will start to demand that Janet Napolitano do something more than dismantle our border fences with Mexico. 1-800-449-8255, Minnesota. Margaret, fire away. You're on the Savage Nation.
Yeah, hi. What troubles me is that Obama is so tolerant of our real enemies, both foreign and domestic, and then he has disdain for drug-free, patriotic, law-abiding citizens who just want freedom. And it's like,
I agree with you. I totally see it your way. I do. I do. The hunter is more feared than the individuals who are blocking the free flow of goods on West Coast ports. I understand what you're saying. They have more contempt for the National Rifle Association than they do for those who are actually interfering with our economy. They have more of a hatred for oil than they do for the Arabs who are basically blackmailing us with their oil, and so forth and so on. But, you know, what's the point of sitting here and complaining? Nothing is going to come of it. Nothing whatsoever. I mean, you wake up and you find out that Chelsea Clinton's been hired by NBC. Even liberals were saying it was the most astonishing failure they've ever seen in their entire life in the media. Now, why would NBC hire Chelsea Clinton? Why? She has no background in the news. Why would they put her on a national show? I don't think you have to be a genius to figure that one out, do you? All right, let's move on. 1-800-449-8255. How about this one? Islamic government's angle for speech curbs in the U.S. Did you hear that one? Islamic government's angle for speech curbs in the U.S. And Hillary Clinton is leading the charge to curb free speech in the United States of America. The State Department under Hillary Clinton began a three-day closed-door meeting to talk about U.S. free speech rules with representatives from numerous throwback Islamic governments that have lobbied for 12 years to end U.S. citizens' ability to speak freely about Islam's history and obligations. Did you hear this? I don't think you understand what this is about. Hillary Clinton is pandering to throwback Islamic governments that have lobbied for 12 years to end U.S. citizens' ability to speak freely about Islam's sad and violent history and obligations to the rest of humanity. Hillary Clinton is pandering to these throwbacks. How much worse does it have to get? Your freedom of speech is now up for grabs. Again, there's nothing you can do about this. This is what you get when you vote in progressive liberals.
Savage. We'll be right back.
So there's some very good political ads out there. And to be fair, we should play some of all of the Republican political ads. Did we just, who did we just play? Ron Paul's Big Dog on the Savage Nation? What? Oh, here's another good one. Rick Perry and Politically Correct. Let's hear 06.
Washington is the capital of political correctness, where doublespeak reigns and the truth is frowned upon. You can't say that congressmen becoming lobbyists is a form of legal corruption, or that we give aid money to countries who oppose America, or that Washington insiders are bankrupting Social Security. You and I know it's true, but not politically correct. I'm Rick Perry, an outsider who will overhaul Washington and tell you the truth, and I approve this message.
See, I like Rick Perry. I don't care that he gets things wrong or he makes a mistake or he can't remember. So what? So what? I'd sleep better at night with him as president, to be very honest with you. Who would you rather have as president? Someone who you know loves the country and can't remember the name of the president of Mongolia or how many Supreme Court justices there are, like a smart college boy, or some glib sophist like Obama whose origins are suspect, whose loyalties are unknown, and who continues to lie to the American people? I'll take Perry any day. Now let's go on to the next one. Did we play Michelle Bachmann's ad yet? Let's play that one. Let's hear that one.
Back in Washington, politicians are looting the Treasury and bankrupting our nation. And Barack Obama has driven our economy into a ditch. Someone needs to say no. I voted against raising the debt limit because it's time to balance the budget and pay down the debt. I mean it, and you can believe it. I'm Michelle Bachmann, candidate for president, and I approve this message.
Even she'd be better. See, any of these people would be great as vice president, president, cabinet appointment. I feel like I'm living in my own country again. So any one of them would be a good choice compared to what we have now. We have the most suspicious president in American history sitting in the White House, which is why there's so much distemper in this country. Make no mistake about it, he is not a normal Democrat. But we've said that over and over again, and I don't have to remind you of why we say that. Let's go on to the one that seems to attract the most attention now, the one that I don't like very much because I think he's a K Street insider, big government neocon, phony through and through, Gingrich. Let's hear Gingrich 3.
Some people say the America we know and love is a thing of the past.
Oh, come on.
I don't believe that.
Oh, God.
Because working together, I know we can rebuild America.
Oh, God.
We can revive our economy and create jobs.
Oh,
shrink
God.
Government and the regulations that strangle our business.
Crap.
Throw out the tax code and replace it with one that is simple and
fair.
Oh,
you're full of...
We can regain the world's respect by standing
strong.
Yeah,
right, sure, with you as
being
president.
Being true to our faith and respecting one another.
You hear the music? That, turn it off. That, I'm not playing the whole thing. I get nauseous listening to it. I'm sorry. I try to be objective about it. But when I heard that saccharine music, and then I heard Gingrich's voice, I know more than ever why I can't support Spinellus Cavinian. Spinellus Cavinian, the Georgia GOPAC tick, is a hard-shelled but soft-headed pest that sustains itself by sucking the blood out of any organism that will increase the tick's much-desired power drive. It gains natural advantages through its seeming intelligence and clever concealment of weaknesses. While the GOPAC tick aggressively latches onto any available host it can find, including prospective mates, it quickly retreats at the sight of organized resistance or the onset of illness. Promised a contract for America, instead gave us a contract on America. Like a Trojan horse, the GOPAC tick can change colors with the landscape and recently struck a deal with the limber leopard, seeing she will likely be the next power on the throne. Several sightings of this rare tick have been reported recently in both Iowa and New Hampshire, a perennial breeding grounds for pests of all sorts. This tick is also known to spread numerous diseases, including severe dysenteria and acute apotheosis. That's the opening to my entry on Newt Gingrich in a book I wrote many years ago in 2005 called The Political Zoo. It's actually a fabulous book way ahead of its time. Unfortunately, it was too truthful with regard to individuals in the media, such as those who are my competitors, and they've never forgiven me for them. Bill O'Reilly in particular has, I mean, this guy, you know, reminds me of Bill O'Reilly. I don't know the man personally, but I hear he hates me with a passion. He gets livid when my name is mentioned, which is why I'm never seen on Fox News. that's to their disadvantage. I could do without them. They can do without me. Good luck. And good luck to you. Now, I also criticized Republicans as well in that book. Everybody was in that book. George Soros. Would you believe I was on to George Soros? But I dared step on, too many toes there in that book. What did I say about George Soros? I didn't even know he existed. How was I so ahead of my time that I even knew who George Soros was? Wait, give me a minute. I'm flipping the page. Oh, God, that's horrible. Those of you lucky enough to possess this book, The Political Zoo, understand what I did here. I gave them a Latin binomial, George Soros, Leechus Omnipotentum. And then I had an artist draw a picture of them. This is frightening, this picture of Soros. So let me just read this to you. In the same phylum as the Magyar maggot, the Budapest centipede is an insidious invertebrate that has hundreds of hands, all of them out and in other people's business. Although the Budapest centipede is, of course, native to Hungary, Buda is the Magyar word for lefty, pest is the Magyar word for pest. This particular pest has migrated to the United States, where it has become a primary source of energy and resources for native animals of the porno belts on the east and left coasts, and native potheads everywhere. Seemingly benign to naive scientists, who often mistake it for a friendly caterpillar, the Budapest centipede is a voracious parasite that, if not controlled, can pick 100 pockets simultaneously. As we speak, it is spreading across the country, infesting American homes and eating through their foundations. This small but ambitious bug also travels to the Caribbean, where it has established its own sanctuary to prevent attacks from the even more predatory insects of the IRS. Wow. That was in 2005. Would you believe? 2006, The Political Zoo. So I want to go to this for 1 minute. I quoted at the beginning of this book because I knew that many people would hate me for it. I wrote, this is a quote from 1681 by John Dryden. Okay, don't fall asleep. Just pay attention. It's three sentences. The true end of satire is the amendment of vice by correction. And he who writes honestly is no more an enemy to the offender than the physician to the patient when he prescribes harsh remedies to an inveterate disease. Of course, that didn't play very well with Hillary Clinton, who unfortunately took me literally and worked very well with her British colleagues to make certain that I could no longer visit the land of the Magna Carta, in my estimation. You see, in The Political Zoo, Hillary Clinton was now working with Islamists to end free speech as we know it. I called a peronista manipulatus. Peronista manipulatus. Now, of course, you would probably need at least a high school education to get this book's message. I called her the limber leopard, an agile and extremely dangerous member of the cat family, native to the Great Lakes, but adapted surprisingly well to the remote areas along Arkansas's Whitewater River. As the queen of her species, this thick-legged predator is known for her domination of the pack, and her one advantage is being able to change her spots at will. This sturdy animal is also known for the unusual processes she uses for selecting a breeding partner. Although she may appear asexual, this predatory beast has a keen eye for the alpha male of her species, or at least one that she could hector into seeming like an alpha male. Although the limber leopard tolerates the alpha's sexual waywardnesses, she can become entirely vicious towards any female of the species that threatens the alpha status of her mate. Not bad, really. It's not bad writing, you know. For a guy who tries very hard, everyone's in here. Nancy Pelosi, Bill O'Reilly, I put them in the same category. Rush Limbaugh was in here. Let's see what I wrote about Nancy Pelosi. Leftist irrationalis. With its large beak and small head, the distempered rainbow parakeet caws with great frequency and volume, yet lacks mental capacity to emit anything original or intelligent. Fortunately, the bird has developed an adaptation that helps it to cope with this problem. The beak's large upper mandible is notched for its little bird foot to fit in. Decked with... I'm sorry. It's been so many years since I read this. Decked with bright blue plumage, the female of the species mates for life, usually with strong and crafty males capable of building large nests and stashing a surplus of fruits and nuts therein. Not only does this preserve the pair from want, but also frees the female to spend nearly all of its waking hours bobbing through the jungle, screeching at any animals not of its flock, and pretending to care about those that have no nests and food at all. Although its original habitat was Maryland, The breed has since migrated to the San Francisco Bay Area, where it aggressively climbed the political pecking order. Today it can be found both in California and Washington, D.C., chirping away mindlessly in either environment. Curiously, aside from its lower-than-average intelligence, the parakeet suffers from one prominent congenital disability. It is only capable of flapping about in circles, primarily because it is born with only a left wing. Come on. Not bad. So that's it. That's not bad, but the book was good. It sold fairly well, not great, not a big, about 100,000 hardcover. I know that's nothing to all of you geniuses in the literary world. All the literary geniuses. They sell 300 books to their grandmother and the AARP members of the grandmother's retirement home, and they think that they're Dostoevsky. But if you sell 100,000 copies, you're nothing to them, because you don't sit around in a cafe with them getting a crazy check. Therefore, you can't be a writer. All right, here we are. I've had a little fun reading from that book, which no doubt will condemn me for the rest of my life to the obscurity of being number two on radio and on the internet, number three and one bestseller after another. What do you want to talk about in the last few minutes of this hour on the Savage Nation when I come back? I asked the show when it began with this question, which is, on a dark night like tonight, it's winter, right? You got, what, 12 shopping days till Christmas. You're probably miserable and frightened. You're probably lonelier than you've ever been in your life. You're afraid to go home in your car. You know there's nothing waiting for you there, but nothing but discord and accusation. You've got nothing to look forward to, whether it's the weekend or a holiday. It's the same bland, horrible universe waiting for the axe to fall. And so you tune into talk radio hoping to find some relief for a few minutes, a half an hour, 15 minutes, an hour. And what you get probably is a good laugh now and again, a few insights into the news, and an otherwise, well, cantankerous guy named Michael Savage helping you get through the day. I'll be right back.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. I hope that you're enjoying the show tonight. After all, as you well know, none of this really means anything. The important people are to be seen on MSNBC. After all, Al Sharpton with a grade school education and a made-up degree. Why, there's the real news that General Electric wants you to hear. Alabama Mike, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yes, Dr. Savage. I was curious as how to you was it different writing a fictional novel, Abuse of Power, as opposed to the other non-fictional works that you've done in the past?
Very interesting. First of all, it's a political thriller. Abuse of Power is a political action thriller, so it has a lot of politics in it. I wanted to reach out to a different audience with a novel rather than simply nonfiction, which is very important, and I think I have achieved that. The book was 6-7 weeks on the New York Times list. It's still in the front of most bookstores. But let me give you an example, Mike, because I can only answer in a general way. I try to put some of what I actually know into the novel to make it more real. So, for example, my character, Jack Hatfield, lives in San Francisco. He lives on a boat along the lines of a boat that I have. He has a dog named Eddie. I have a dog named Teddy. But, you know, I don't suffer from Asperger's, so far as I know, and I don't sit and play with clocks when things get stressful. So, in other words, there's fiction and then there's, you know, reality here. So here's a scene I'm going to read for you and the listeners from Abuse of Power, where Jack goes down to a restaurant on Fisherman's Wharf, where many people think I still go, but I should tell you, I don't go to Fisherman's Wharf anymore. I have not been there in 6 months or more. I just don't go there. The only Italian restaurant I go to in the city is in North Beach at the North Beach restaurant. So don't look for me down on the wharf, and it's all fictional. So they go down there for a meal. They both look up to see Danny Pescatore emerging from the kitchen with a grin on his face. A short, squat, powerful Sicilian who, along with his brother Carlo, had been running Pagliacci's for over 30 years now, ever since their parents had retired. Pagliacci's on the Wharf was a San Francisco institution. It had been standing on this very same spot for nearly a century, serving Sicilian seafood that made your mouth water just thinking about it. It didn't hurt that it boasted a view of 24 bobbing fishing boats, Alcatraz Island, and the bay, stretching past the Golden Gate Bridge to the headlands. Let me pause right here. I don't go there. It doesn't exist. But I'll continue in my fiction writing. Jack had been coming here for longer than he could remember and always found it difficult to say no to the shrimp. The pescatories made sure that he got the A-Shack supply, which was reserved for family and friends. Shrimp that always smacked to the sea, briny, not slimy. Okay, so I'm expressing now in this novel my preferences in food, but it's not from a real restaurant. I'll go on. But it was Tony who was the mainstay here. He'd practically grown up in the place, and the pescatories always treated him like a brother. He knew more about the wharf and wharf politics than anyone really should, and I once said to Jack, if I told you even a third of what I know, I'd be in cement shoes before you could peel one of those shrimp you love. In San Francisco, almost all Italians of a certain generation knew each other like extended family. As Danny Pescatore emerged from the kitchen, he made a quick side trip to the front counter, then crossed the dining room toward them, waving a small card. Hey, what did I tell you? Despite his mood, Tony's eyes lit up. The gala? Danny reached the table and dropped an invitation in front of him. Next Saturday night, VIP party. It was a black tie dinner at the Legion of Honor that promised appearances by the governor, the mayor, two senators, a roster of movie and rock stars that would make Woodstock look like a block party, and the president of the United States himself. At $7,500 a plate, only the top tier would be there. I'm reading from Abuse of Power, page 71. Tony had been angling for this invitation for months, and then I go on. So the fact of the matter is that I actually went to such a dinner at the Palace of the Legion of Honor last December in the museum. And what's astonishing, to show you how provincial San Francisco is, here is a best-selling novel read by people around the world, 6-7 weeks in the New York Times list. It's set in San Francisco. It has a better description of the bay than anything written since Jack London. It has a major scene in one of the major museums, and not one newspaper in this provincial throwback city would spend so much as one line on the book. Now, I don't need them. But it shows you, here's a thing called the San Francisco Chronicle. What does it chronicle? The malcontents, the cranks, the vermin, the drug addicts, the prostitutes. Any failure in this society is lauded by this newspaper. And this is a product of 20 or 30 years of a degeneracy of the public mind and the public obligation of the media. It's the same on television. Take a look at your television sets. Look at the scum of the earth that is paraded across your screens. I'm reaching a point now where I want to break the television set every time I turn it on. Every time I turn it on, there's one low-life degenerate after another held up as either a victim or a role model or a crank. And they let the lowest common denominators in our society pull the rest of society down. And so you say, well, what's the difference between a novel like yours, Abuse of Power, political thriller, and writing nonfiction? The answer is a big difference, because I get to tell a story, I get to invent things, there's a lot more freedom in a novel. But on the other hand, if you lose track of the story, the people aren't going to read it. So it has to be a fast-paced story that's exciting. And then you hope one day a larger audience will read it, and slowly you can inject your political views into their thinking through the characters. And so my characters, my heroes, are generally older white males, because they're my heroes. And if you don't like it, then write your own novel. You can make up a novel with any character you like and go see if you can find an audience for it. You're welcome to do so. My heroes are generally older white males, and those who will my heroes will continue to be. And yet, strangely enough, I must tell you that there is a Muslim woman hero in Abuse of Power. You would think that one Muslim nation in the world would have noted this, that I distinguish between Islamists who want to destroy civilization and Muslims who are as much threatened by them as are Christians and Jews and the rest of us in the Western world who may not be religious. But no. So it just shows you that it doesn't pay to even care what the others think. And so on my next novel, there will be no minority hero, because it doesn't matter. They will all be the people that I know to be the real heroes in my world. If you don't like it, write your own book.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now,
America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Big news today is that there's a lot of news today, and yes, of course, I know there's a lot of news today. Newt and Romney and Santorum and Ron whatever and whatever her name is. Look, I know this is the most important election in American history, but I know there's been an endless campaign by Republicans. I know that the Middle East is burning because of Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, and George Soros. Yes, I know that the Russian elections have obviously been fixed. Yes, I know the world is in flames. But what bothers me today is a pair of broken eyeglass frames. You see, they're 3 years old. They were Tommy Bahama frames, and the hinge broke. Well, I went back with these prescription eyeglasses to the store that sold them to me. And they said, I'm sorry, Tommy Bahama frames are no longer available. So I asked one of their clerks if they could get me the part that was broken. And she said with a smile, no. Happily, she said, that part is unavailable. And I said, you've shown more happiness about the product not being available than anything you've done today. No wonder your company is in trouble. So then call a jewelry store that they say fixes eyeglass frames. The jewelry store cheerfully told me on the phone, oh, yes, we can, but the minimum charge for laser soldering is $85. I said, are you kidding? $85 is almost as much as the frames cost. Well, this is a microcosm of what's wrong with America today. Where are the tradesmen who used to fix your eyeglass frames while you waited for $15? It should take about 5 minutes. That should be worth maybe $10, including overhead machinery, insurance, workers' comp. So maybe it's worth $15, but $85 minimum? So what am I supposed to do, throw out prescription lenses because I can't find the frame that they will fit into? Well, apparently the answer is yes. In a throwaway society, you're supposed to throw them out the way you throw out your grandfather when he's no longer useful. So what does this have to do with the election? Everything and nothing. Do you think there is one candidate who can change this in America? I don't. Do you think any of the candidates or the existing president is going to create tradesmen in America who can fix eyeglass frames? I don't. So where does that leave us? Exactly where we are today. Notes for the Savage Nation. As I said to you, I've been unable to replace the eyeglass frames for my glasses, and to me that has more of an impact than who's running for the presidency right now. And I have to ask you, have you had trouble repairing or replacing an item that was broken? Do you feel this is related to the fact that our manufacturing base in America has been destroyed and the young people are capable only of occupying and running websites? Do you feel this would change if trade schools were established instead of students being pushed into college who are not ready for it? I mean, how many lawyers can there be at any one time? Also on the Savage Nation, last week a drone was delivered to Iran in perfect shape. This week the U.S. Air Force delivered another drone into the Indian Ocean. These are the world's most technologically advanced remotely operated attack and surveillance devices. Do you think these crashes have been occurring by accident? Or do you fear there's a mole in the Pentagon who's causing this? What message do you think they're trying to send? Do you think we'll see another model airplane drone crash in the next couple of weeks? What steps do you think need to be taken to prevent this from happening again? How about closing down the drone unit and having the FBI rubber hose them until they find out who's doing it? Also, the federal government is calling for a national ban on cell phone use while driving, except for hands-free devices and emergency calls. Well, it's not such a bad idea, but do you think it's overreach by the federal government? And now let's go to the website of websites, michaelsavage.com, and let's see what's there. Cheney says Obama should have destroyed the drone. Instead, he asked nicely for them to return it. I've never heard anything like this. I'm raising a big question today. Why is the Department of Homeland Security letting the bums block ports? Do you understand what this is? This is interstate commerce. It's international commerce. The Department of Homeland Security has an obligation, their mandate, is to make sure that this doesn't happen, and yet they're not doing a thing about these bums, these occupiers who are blocking ports on the West Coast. Why? Why is Obama and Napolitano letting this happen?
We have bent over backwards to say to the Islamic Republic of Iran that we are willing to have a constructive conversation.
Strong presidents talk to their adversaries. That's what Kennedy did with Khrushchev.
We haven't shown a willingness to engage in the sort of direct negotiations with Iran.
Iran, Cuba, Venezuela, these countries are tiny. They don't pose a serious threat to us.
Wow, you know how much that irritates me. Well, imagine how your throat will get this winter without Pine Brothers Softish Throat Drops. That's right. I'm talking about Pine Brothers Softish Throat Drops we all grew up with. They're back in natural honey and wild cherry flavors. Pine Brothers has been a trusted brand since 1870. Visit them on the web at pinebrothers.com. That's pinebrothersyum.com. Deadly grenade attack in Belgium linked to another Muslim honor killing. Many wounded, many killed. Here are some other stories on michaelsavage.com. Puerto Rico government denies Puerto Rico is a narco state, even though the illegal drug trade is about 20% of the GDP of Puerto Rico. Trump withdraws from Newsmax ION TV debate. Uh-oh. Iran threatens to block a key oil route, the Hormuz Straits. Maybe we can ask them nicely if they would not do it. After all, you don't want to upset the Islamists, right? If you'd like to see the beautiful children of the 2012 Republican presidential candidates, we have pictures of them in the middle of michaelsavage.com. They include students, medical doctors, a U.S. senator. The girls are really beautiful. Who said Republicans don't have babes? They do. Canada First Nation to pull out of Kyoto Protocol. Violence breaks out at Seattle port protest. When is the DHS going to stop them? Obama to slash National Guard force on the border with Mexico. Thanks, Barry. MF Global execs in dark over where $1.2 billion went. How's that possible? Homeland Security fails to stop terrorists who close Oakland port. Long Islanders discover descendants of uncle feared drowned in 1950s. Canada bans veils at citizenship oath ceremony. Well, that's really a racist thing to do, to not let someone wear a full head outfit. That's just what Canada needs in the modern world, is throwbacks to the 15th century. That's not even in the Quran, by the way. This is some 9th century insanity. Canada's government has introduced a ban on the wearing of veils while swearing the oath of citizenship. Why would they even have these throwbacks in the country? An estimated 940,000 Muslims live in Canada, about almost 3% of the population. Veils and face coverings are already banned in Quebec for people receiving some government services. Wow, that's really racist, not letting women cavort in the 9th century outfits. As you know, some European countries are also debating the issue of the throwback outfit. France and Belgium have introduced a ban on wearing the full Islamic veil in public. Oh, my. My, that's really something. I guess they hate Canada, but they like the Canadian dollar, huh? And all the welfare benefits? It's sickening. It wouldn't be the kind of country I would run. All this and more, by the way, on michaelsavage.com. And if you want to get a copy of Abuse of Power, we found out there are a few copies left of the first printing. We got notice of that today. Buy your rare first printing while copies last. Abuse of Power. 1-800-449-8255. Michael Savage. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Let me describe one thing for you about landing and taking off, because it was contested as to what is more frightening, if you want to put it that way, or more exciting, if you want to put it that way. So let us begin at the beginning. I don't want to build it up like I was an astronaut, but for me, it was pretty big deal, okay? Civilian, never flew a jet. I mean, never flew a combat plane. But I'll make it faster than slower. Strapped in, everyone tells you when you take off in the C-2 Greyhound, it's going to be like an ordinary routine flight for the 30 to 40 minutes, which is about how long it took from the North Station in San Diego to get out to the ship, which was in an area off the coast. And I can't describe where it was because it's not your business. But it was about 45 minutes out. Let's put it to you that way. So they said it's going to be very, very rough when you land, I was told, because the pilots will often do a bank and a roll, a 90-degree roll, in order to slow the plane down. I said, even with distinguished visitors aboard? They said, yeah, no matter who's aboard, they'll come in and fly over the deck to get a bearing, and then they're going to make a sharp left bank and come around. And they said, then the fun begins, because remember, they got to hit the tail hook. There are four lines. There are four wires on that deck. Now, those of you who know anything about it know that they never want to hit the number one wire. Never. You'd say, wow, that would be better. No. The reason they don't aim for the number one wire is because it would mean the angle of approach is too low and they're liable to smash into the carrier. So the preferred cables to grab, the number one preferred line is number three. They want to hit three line. You can hit two or three, but three is the best. If you hit four, it means you missed two or three. Now, you got to come in at full power. Why does the pilot have to come in at full power, meaning his engines are running at full speed? Because if he should miss... if his tail hook should miss the wire or it should skip off the wire, the plane has to be ready to take off. The pilot has to be able to go wham all the way forward and take off, or else he crashes on the deck. You don't need that disaster. Now, the same thing is played out on an FA-18 Hornet. Okay, imagine coming in at full power, what kind of skill and nerve this takes. Well, I wasn't on an FA-18. I was on a turboprop plane. It came in at a probably, I don't know, 120 knots. I don't know the exact speed, 80 to 120 knots. And it's called a controlled crash because you go from 100 and whatever knots to zero in about like 1-2 seconds or something like that when the tail hook hits. They said you're going to hear it's going to sound like the bottom of the plane is falling out when you come down close to the deck because you're flying about a foot off the deck. And the tail hook is grabbing along, dragging along the bottom. And it sounds like pieces are falling off the plane, but don't be scared because the plane's not crashing. And also, when you take off, they said smoke is going to be coming up from the floorboards because whatever, I don't know where the smoke went. There was lots of smoke coming through, whatever. So the landing was nothing to me. I actually was laughing and had a great time. It was a great deal of fun. That was nothing. So I then spent the next 24 hours asking everyone, well, what's worse, landing or taking off? And it was very interesting. People were saying, well, landing is worse than taking off. I got to tell you, the taking off was different. And a complete loss of control. I didn't have a sense of a loss of control in the landing. I don't know why. Well, you're sitting backwards, number one. And since you're landing and the thrust takes you backwards, you're thrown into the seat rather than out of the seat. So I guess you don't feel it as much. Unfortunately, the seats are still backwards when you take off, which is exactly the wrong way for them to be because you're going to be thrust with your head down. So you're held in a four-point harness, but your head is not held by anything. So... anyway, you're sitting on the deck, and it's very hot in there. It's not air-conditioned. It's a military plane, and this full thing on your head, whatever it's called, full cranial, you're sweating like hell because it's hot, and the earphones are very tight because they don't want you to go deaf, and the engines are revving and revving and revving and revving, and it's noisy, and your legs are crashed right up against the seat in front of you to make sure you don't, you know, kill yourself. Arms crossed, and then I don't know who they were, but they jump up and scream, seconds before that, it starts flashing, prepare for blah, 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 it's flat. Then the guys jump up, these huge guys screaming, you know, take off, take off, take off, you know, like that's blah, 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 and bang. So it's 1-2, you're going to 180 knots in 2 seconds, and then all of a sudden the strangest thing happens. You're in suspended animation hanging from your strap as the plane goes dead silent in the air and slightly dips below the deck of the carrier. And you think that the plane is like sailing into the water because there's no sound, zero. And you're like groping in the air because you have no control over it. It's like sort of a sense of space. And that was it. And it was fun and it was great. And I'll never forget it.
But we've talked enough about this.
I'm reading from Isaiah now in the Savage Nation. Whether you've never touched a Bible in your life or you are familiar with it, please listen. Because it's a blueprint for what is coming. The burden of Babylon, which Isaiah the son of Amoz did see, set ye up an ensign upon the high mountain, lift up the voice unto them, wrote God, wave the hand that they may go into the gates of the nobles. And he goes on, they come from a far country, from the end of heaven, even the Lord and the weapons of his indignation to destroy the whole earth. Howl ye, for the day of the Lord is at hand, as destruction from the Almighty shall it come. Therefore shall all hands be slack, and every heart of man shall melt, and they shall be affrighted, pangs and throes shall take hold of them. They shall be in pain as a woman in travail. They shall look aghast at one another. Their faces shall be of flame. Behold, the day of the Lord cometh, Taliban, cruel and full of wrath and fierce anger, to make the earth a desolation. Of course, we mean your earth, Taliban, and to destroy you, the sinners thereof, out of it. For the stars of heaven and the constellations thereof shall not give their light. The sun shall be darkened in his going forth, and the moon shall not cause her light to shine. And I will visit upon the world their evil, and upon the wicked their iniquity. And I will cause the arrogancy of the proud to cease, and I will lay low the haughtiness of the tyrants, Mr. and Mrs. Taliban. I will make man more rare than fine gold in your land, even man than the pure gold of Ophir. Therefore I will make the heavens to tremble, and the earth shall be shaken out of her place, for the wrath of the Lord of hosts, and for the day of his fierce anger. And it shall come to pass that as the chaste gazelle, and a sheep that no man gathereth, they shall turn every man to his own people, and shall flee every man to his own land. Every one that is found shall be thrust through, and every one that is caught shall fall by the sword. The babes also shall be dashed in pieces before their eyes. Their houses shall be spoiled, and their wives ravished. Behold, I will stir up the Medes against them, who shall not regard silver. And as for gold, they shall not delight in it. And their bows shall dash the young men in pieces. And Babylon, the glory of kingdoms, the beauty of the pride, shall be as when God overthrew Sodom and Gomorrah, Mr. and Mrs. Taliban. And your land, what will come of it? The Taliban who send us anthrax? Those of you who are so haughty now in your filthy nightshirts, who are taking pleasure in killing the men, women, and children, and cutting the throats of women, Mr. and Mrs. Taliban, here is what God has for you. Your land shall never be inhabited, neither shall it be dwelt in from generation to generation. Neither shall the Arabian pitch tent there, neither shall the shepherds make their folds there, but wildcats shall lie there, and their houses shall be full of ferrets, and ostriches shall dwell there, and satyrs shall dance there. And jackals shall howl in their castles. I'll be right back.
Savage.
There is a growing number of people who feel uneasy with the current crop of GOP candidates. Well, I'm not one of them, because I think any one of them would be better than Obama. Joining us now is a columnist named Jack Hunter, who gives his reasoning why some at the head of the pack might not be the right choice. Jack Hunter, welcome back to the Savage Nation.
Always good to be with you, Michael.
In your column, you say that the current frontrunners have an anti-conservative frame of mind. What do you mean?
Well, you know, a lot of conservatives rightly are attacking what we see as the emerging frontrunner in the Republican presidential field now, Newt Gingrich. Conservatives are attacking him for his many liberal positions. You know, everything from funding the Planned Parenthood to support for gun control, amnesty, I mean, bank bailouts, No Child Left Behind, Medicare Plan D. We could go on and on all day. And a lot of conservatives are scrambling to defend Newt Gingrich. Where is all this coming from? Well, I make the argument in my latest piece at the Daily Caller, entitled "Does Newt Gingrich Want the Constitution to Die?" that he has constantly had what I call an anti-conservative sort of mindset. And what do I mean by that? If you go back to traditional conservatism, Barry Goldwater, intellectuals like Russell Kirk, who's a hero of mine, they always talk about custom and habit, sort of the wisdom of our ancestors, looking back at the founding fathers, sort of custom and prescription, sort of these traditional hallmark conservative values. Newt Gingrich possesses none of that. He is a man who is open to any sort of whimsical fancy on the intellectual side of things, ready to revolutionize society at the drop of a hat. And a good example of that was his support for this sort of third wave thinking of Alvin and Heidi Kaufler in the 1990s. A lot of people have written about his support of that. But let me just share you, talking about with you Newt Gingrich's anti-conservative state of mind. This is a passage from a book. A lot of people know about this now, that Newt Gingrich wrote the foreword to in 1995. The book was called Creating a New Civilization, The Politics of the Third Wave by Alvin and Heidi Kaufler. This is on page 91 of this book, and I quote, "For this wisdom, above all, we thank Mr. Jefferson, who helped create the system that served us so well for so long and that now must, in its turn, die and be replaced. Now, Newt Gingrich had this to say about this book, that it's a key effort in the direction of empowering citizens and, quote, to truly take the leap to invent a new civilization. Now, if the Topplers are thanking Mr. Jefferson, we could assume they're talking about Thomas Jefferson, for the system he helped create, but now it should be replaced, that it should die. What are they talking about? Well, the system of government we have in the United States is this little experiment called the U.S. Constitution. That is what the Topplers want to replace. Newt Gingrich, in his foreword and elsewhere, in his praise for the Topplers' work, obviously thought that was a good idea. I can't think of anything, Michael, more anti-conservative than that sentiment. From Barry Goldwater through Ronald Reagan and for most of the existence of the American right, our job as conservatives has been to protect and to promote the United States Constitution. That is our legal and civilizational heritage, if you will. And for a guy like Gingrich to pass himself off as a conservative and to be against the Constitution, it's just mind-boggling that anybody would consider, conservatives especially, this guy one of our own.
Well, what do you think the guiding philosophies are?
Now, it's interesting that you ask that, Michael. What are Newt Gingrich's guiding philosophies? I dare say he has none. That is part of the problem. This guy's all over the place. Let's take a look at what former Congressman Mickey Edwards had to say about Newt Gingrich. This is a quote. Quote, I've known Newt for almost 30 years almost, but I wouldn't be able to describe what his real principles are. Well, if you know somebody for 30 years and you're trying to figure out what their principles are and you can't figure out what they are, maybe they don't have any. When you look at Newt's record, his long liberal record, and we could rattle off the liberal policy offenses all day long, conservatives are now scratching their head and saying to themselves, where did this come from? Did it just happen to come into his head when he was sitting next to Nancy Pelosi in that commercial or traveling around via bus with Al Sharpton? No, they've always been there because he has no sort of constitutional conservatism in his set of principles. I dare say he has no set of principles. Actually, Yuval Levin at National Review made a similar observation to Congressman Edwards. This is Yuval Levin, quote, Gingrich exhibits the technocratic countenance of the Rockefeller Republican, a program for every problem. Conservative humility about human nature and about the potential of technical solutions is not readily discernible. I think it's a fair assessment of Mr. Gingrich, his mindset, that I call anti-conservative. That's not something that Jack Hunter just came out with out of the blue. Many observers, people have been paying attention to Newt Gingrich for a very long time. Senator Tom Coburn, across the board, do not recognize this guy as one of our own. He is not conservative now. He has never been a conservative. And in fact, Newt Gingrich's entire career has been to rationalize big government from a Republican perspective. I think that pretty much encapsulates it. And I'm sorry, to have that guy at the highest office to be the president of the United States is going to take us so many steps backwards as conservatives, as constitutionalists, and as Americans, quite frankly.
Well, what should happen from here, Jack?
Well, see, that's the great fear. Nobody wants to see Barack Obama in office another 4 years. But this is the problem, Michael. And a lot of conservatives sort of sense this. We don't know what to do. A lot of people are desperate right now because Obama's been so god-awful. Every time we settle for basically a Republican version of what the other side has to offer, as Newt Gingrich is through and through, we always get bigger government. I made the point in this election that, you know, say a Mitt Romney or Newt Gingrich or any of the other people running for president were actually able to just level off what Obama has done, an exploding government, much less step backwards, which is what we really need to get away from this debt, this massive spending and the size of government, those Republican presidents, that either any of them, will have accomplished what even Ronald Reagan could accomplish, the best president of my lifetime. But at the end of his term, government got bigger. Does anybody believe the front runners in this right now in this GOP field can accomplish what Reagan couldn't? Now, I'm not saying that Barack Obama would be preferable, but I'm saying that conservatives make a big mistake when we settle. And we've done that in every election till the cows come home and government keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger. If you think Newt Gingrich is going to take us away from that, there's two things you need to think about. There's absolutely nothing in his record that suggests as such. And also, him being arguably one of the worst people to represent the Republican Party heading into 2012, it is going to take the Tea Party, so much of what we've accomplished in the last 2 or 3 years of getting back to real traditional American conservatism, it's going to take us so far away from that in so many awful, dreadful ways.
Jack Hunter, thanks again for being on The Savage Nation. I'm Michael Savage. We'll be right back.
Savage.
the most efficient worker on the planet is the American worker. That's right. And so what we need are politicians who put America first, not last. I know this is starting to sound like a stump speech. Maybe it should be. Maybe I'll get so angry one day that I'll run for office, which will never happen. Frankly, don't call now and say, Mike, run, please. Don't take any of those calls. I stumbled into it. I made the fatal radio mistake. It's like saying there are four things you can't say in radio. If I name them, I'll give my competition too much ammunition. I've known people who've killed their careers with four topics. They're known as the third rail of talk radio. Oh, the board lights up. And the fools think that they're actually popular. You lose 98% of your audience, but the 2% of fanatics who call about it. All I have to do is say reload. There's some code words like reload. There was a guy on radio, very nice man. I shouldn't do it because I don't mean to mock him. He's a very nice guy. But if you said anything to do with an airplane, no matter what he was talking about, he'd go into like bomber missions from World War II. If you said, oh, darn, I was out on the lake last week and a fly was bothering me. It was like a Manchurian candidate. The next thing he'd be talking about, well, we were flying over Berlin and those bombs, you know, that kind of thing. You can't say fly, aileron. You can't say wing. You know, I went to the turkey dinner. Man, do I love those wings. Beam, out of business. I love those turkey wings. The next thing, we were flying over Korea in that bat wing plane, and this is the way it went. Nicest guy in the world. There are trigger words that set people off. It's the same with talk radio audiences. If there are four topics you can never, ever talk about on radio, you will destroy your audience. I'm not going to tell you what they are, giving you an example. Reload. You can get gun nuts to call day and night. Day and night. All you got to do is start saying anything to do with ballistics or look at a cartridge and look at the amount of powder in a cartridge. That's the end of the show. 3 days you're going to get callers on it. I'm not mocking them. I appreciate men who can reload their guns, but it's not something I want to talk about. And the average person doesn't want to talk about it either. I mean, I'll talk about food stamps because I know that there's a nightmare in the nation when you have 45.8 million people on food stamps. And the amount of graft, just commonsensical, would tell you what percent would you say is graft? How much of those food stamps what percentage are being used by people who don't need them? How many food stamps, dollar-wise, are being traded and sold? Do you know they're being sold? Do you know that? Do you know that there are people who are not poor who get food stamps and sell them like counterfeit money for, let's say, 10 cents on the dollar? Let's say a food stamp has a dollar value. They sell it for 10 cents. Haven't you any idea what's going on in this country? Zechariah talks about what could be considered nuclear war, and it shall come to pass in that day that there shall not be light but heavy clouds and thick. You hear this? And there shall be one day which shall be known as the Lord's, not day and not night, but it shall come to pass that at evening time there shall be light. And it shall come to pass in that day that living water shall go out from Jerusalem, half of them toward the eastern sea and half of them toward the western sea. In summer and in winter shall it be. It's frightening. I mean, it really makes your hair stand up because it's pretty ugly what's coming. He says, I will gather all nations against Jerusalem to battle. If this doesn't sound like what's going on right now, it seems to me all the nations of the world are lined up against Jerusalem right now. It seems all the nations are lined up against Jerusalem, except the nation of Christianity here in America. And the city shall be taken, and the houses rifled, and the women ravished, and half the city shall go forth into captivity. But the residue of the people shall not be cut off from the city. Then shall the Lord go forth and fight against those nations. And when he fighteth in the day of battle, and his feet shall stand in that day upon the Mount of Olives, which is before Jerusalem on the east, and the Mount of Olives. Shall I stop this right now? Read it for yourself. It's in Zechariah 14. So he actually, in this Zechariah, predicts that Israel shall be attacked, the city shall be razed, half the city shall be taken into captivity, and at that point, God steps in. And at that point, you'll have to see how this story comes out. It says that, because it goes like this, and it shall come to pass in that day that there shall not be light, but heavy clouds and thick. So the Israelis then go nuclear. And they incinerate Iran, they incinerate Syria, they incinerate their enemies. And it shall come to pass in that day that living water shall go out from Jerusalem, half of them toward the eastern sea and half of them toward the western sea. In summer and in winter shall it be. And the Lord shall be king over all the earth. In that day shall the Lord be one and his name one. All the land shall be turned. I don't want to read anymore because many of you don't believe in this. And I don't know whether to believe in it. And this shall be the plague where the Lord will smite all the peoples that have warred against Jerusalem. You're listening to this one? If this is not a description of nuclear destruction of the Iranian people and the Syrian people, I'd like to know a better clinical description of than what I'm going to read to you. I'll read it to you. It is a description of the after effects of a nuclear holocaust upon Iran and upon Syria. And this shall be the plague wherewith the Lord will smite all the peoples that have warred against Jerusalem. Their flesh shall consume away while they stand upon their feet. And their eyes shall consume away in their sockets. And their tongue shall consume away in their mouth. And it shall come to pass in that day that a great tumult from the Lord shall be among them. And they shall lay hold every one in the hand of his neighbor. And his hand shall rise up against the hand of his neighbor. So it's terrible. It's terrible, but that is what the psychopath from Iran wants. The psychopath from Iran is trying to annihilate the Jewish people. He stands up with that dirty smirk on his face every day and says, the death of Israel is near. The Jews shall be driven into the sea. We shall destroy it. This is every day. And those pimps at the UN, those whoremongering pimps at the UN say nothing. Those dirty, useless pimps in the UN, I have nothing but utter guttered contempt for all of them. They're worthless, all of them. They say nothing. Instead, they attack America. They attack Israel. And they wonder why we, the people who know what's going on, want those degenerate bums thrown out of the east side. Don't get me started. Don't get me started, because I can get really good started here. The UN, I spit on them. Worthless. But God will take care of them in the end, I can guarantee you. But what I've read to you before I got emotionally wrapped up in this is a perfect clinical description of what happens to people with the effects of a nuclear bomb. Now, it's interesting that I'm talking about this right now, because I once interviewed on this show 10 years ago the man who created the neutron bomb, and it was an astounding interview. I have the tapes somewhere. I have to get them for you for next week. But he wrote an autobiography called Shame. His name is Cohen, I remember now. Mr. Cohen developed the neutron bomb. By the way, we have no neutron bombs. George Bush Sr. Disassembled all of them in an attempt to make the world safer. Did you know that? I don't know if you know this. It's shocking to understand. It's heartbreaking to tell you this, but hey, what the heck? I'm that kind of guy. We once had neutron bombs. George Bush I disassembled all of our neutron bombs in an attempt to make peace. He went along the liberal road. Now, our enemies now have neutron bombs. We don't, so far as I last checked. But Mr. Cohen writes in his autobiography, Shame, about a lot of symptoms of a nuclear explosion. And you're not going to believe what I tell you, and it's going to take me a little time to get into this. I didn't plan on this right now. I'm going to have to go get the book, which I have a few steps from here in my vast Savage library. I have the biography. I'm looking right at it here, but it's at the back of the office, the studio. He describes why he thinks, psychologically, why he became a scientist and why he developed a bomb that would do this to people. The symptoms that I just described to you, the melting away, in essence, of a person's flesh. Their flesh shall consume away while they stand upon their feet, and their eyes shall consume away in their sockets, and their tongue shall consume away in their mouth. To me, out of Zechariah, I'm reading to you a prophetic vision of what's coming to the enemies of Israel. It ends with Jerusalem shall dwell safely. The enemy shall be exterminated. But this is after half the Jews are killed and taken into captivity. In other words, you want to talk about a nightmare scenario. You know, who's the winner here? Well, it would be much better if the UN sent out a strike force to take out the psychopath of Iran before he leads the world to a nuclear holocaust. That is what any sane individual would understand needs to be done. These madmen must be stopped. But instead, we have psychopaths in America. We have idiots on the Democrat side who say we are provoking Iran, that they're peace-loving people, that they mean no harm. They are the most dangerous people on the planet. These potheads, these sexual deviants that the media continues to hold up as role models, these know-nothings, these psychopaths, get up and scream. They hate the military. We're the warmonger. They have everything upside down. They may as well be looking through a diseased mind, because they are looking through a diseased mind. As William Blake the poet wrote in the 19th century, the mind that alters, alters all. They have altered everything. They now take the nation, their fatherland or their motherland called America, which has given them so much, and they spit on it and they hate it. And they turn us into the monster, and they turn the true enemy of civilization, of life, into an oppressed minority. If that's not an example of an insane mind, I'd like to know what is. And yet, if you turn on Larry King, he specializes. He is a specialist in interviewing these diseased minds. We see a book coming out now. Publisher lower than OJ, says Michael Savage. A book by a man who allegedly committed two murders, held up as a book. Is this a book, or is it something other than a book? These are all symptoms, though. These are not the problem. I want you to understand something. This book is not the problem. They are mere symptoms of the disease, the rot of our soul. The nation's soul has been rotted out. Just as the enemies of Israel will take half the nation and destroy it and put it in captivity, so half of our nation has been taken and put into the captivity of liberalism. Don't you understand that? They are the diseased minds of our time. And we must not let that disease spread to the rest of us, particularly in these times. We must not let the diseased minds convince us that they have the right way. Everything they say is wrong. Everything they tell you is upside down. How else do you explain an idiot like Kucinich telling us that Iran means us no harm, when every day Iran says, we will destroy every Jew, we will kill, we will destroy Israel, wipe it off the planet? Why is this guy Kucinich allowed to speak on Fox, on MSNBC, on CNN? There are Jews all over those media outlets. What kind of Jews are they? They're exactly the Jews that the Bible wrote about. The Jews that worship the golden calf.